Okay. Well. So this is a verse from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, from the 14th chapter, verse number 16. Karmana sutratasya hu satvikam nirmalam phalam rajasa tu phalam dukam agyanam tamasa phalam. Krishna's explaining activity in the different modes of material nature. In this chapter, Krishna is describing the mode of goodness, the mode of passion, and the mode of ignorance, and the different characteristics and qualities that are, what we say, featured in each of the particular modes. In this particular verse, Krishna is explaining the three modes in their different qualities. The result of pious action is pure and is said to be in the mode of goodness. But action done in the mode of passion results in misery, and action performed in the mode of ignorance results in foolishness. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The result of pious activities in the mode of pure goodness, the result of pious activity in the mode of goodness is pure. Therefore, the sages, who are free from all illusions, are situated in happiness. But activities in the mode of passion are simply miserable. Any activity for material happiness is bound to be defeated. If, for example, one wants to have a skyscraper, so much human misery has to be undergone before a big skyscraper can be built. The financier has to take so much trouble to earn a massive wealth, and those who are slaving to construct the building have to render physical toil. The miseries are there. Thus, Bhagavad Gita says that in any activity performed under the spell of the mode of passion, there is definitely great misery. There may be a little so-called mental happiness. I have this house or this money, but this is not actual happiness. As far as the mode of ignorance is concerned, the performer is without knowledge, and therefore all of one's activities result in present misery. And afterwards, he goes on towards animal life. Animal life is always miserable, although under the spell of the illusionary energy, Maya, the animals do not understand this. Slaughtering poor animals is also due to the mode of ignorance. The animal killers do not know that in the future the animal will have a body suitable to kill them. That is the law of nature. In human society, if one kills a man, he has to be punished or hanged. That is the law of the state. Because of ignorance, people do not perceive that there is a complete state controlled by the Supreme Lord. Every living creature is a son of the Supreme Lord, and he does not tolerate even an ant being killed. One has to pay for it. So indulgence in animal killing for the taste of the tongue is the grossest type of ignorance. A human being has no need to kill animals, because God has supplied so many nice things. If one indulges in meat-eating anyway, it is understood that he is acting in ignorance and is making his future very dark. Of all kinds of animal killing, the killing of cows is the most vicious, because the cow gives us all kinds of pleasure by supplying milk. Cow slaughter is an act of the grossest type of ignorance. In the Vedic literatures, in the Rig Veda, it is said, Gobi Prinita Matsaram, indicates that one who, being fully satisfied by milk, is desirous of killing the cow, is in the grossest of ignorance. There is also a prayer in the Vedic literature which states, Namo Brahmanya Devaya, Go Brahmanya Hitaya Cha, Jagat Hitaya Krishnaya, Govindaya Namo Namaha. My Lord, You are the well-wisher of the cows and the brahmanas, and You are the well-wisher of the entire human society and world. Vishnu Purana 1.19.65. The purport is that special mention is given in that prayer for the protection of the cows and the brahmanas. Brahmanas are the symbol of spiritual education, and the cows are the symbol of the most valuable food. These two living creatures, the brahmanas and the cows, must be given all protection. That is real advancement in civilization. In modern human society, spiritual knowledge is neglected and cow killing is encouraged. It is to be understood that human society is advancing in the wrong direction and is clearly the path to its own condemnation. A civilization which guides its citizens to become animals in their next life is certainly not a human civilization. The present civilization is, of course, grossly misled by the modes of passion and ignorance. It is a very dangerous age, and all nations should take care to provide the easiest process, Krishna consciousness, to save humanity from the greatest danger. Om Agyan Timidam Dasya Kina Jena Salakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shigurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manovistam Staptitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swam Padantikam Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasari Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. I chose this verse because I wanted to bring out the point that in order to practice spiritual life effectively, one has to free themselves from the lower modes, which are the modes of passion and the modes of ignorance. The mode of goodness is actually the platform for what we say moral, religious lifestyle, which allows one ultimately to come to the platform of Krishna consciousness. Krishna appeared, just like 2 days ago we celebrated the Janmashtami ceremony. And Krishna came to remove the world from irreligion by killing so many demons. There were so many demons when Krishna appeared. Said that the earth was overburdened with demoniac population. Kings in the disguise, demons in the disguise of kings had practically taken over the whole world. And Krishna came to remove the demons and at the same time reestablish true religious principles, because people cannot be happy unless they're living by religious principles. There's no question. Simple to live by principles to take care of the body, then that is what we say polished animal life. Human life is meant for self-realization. Human life is actually meant to realize God. And Krishna came, and he also came to give pleasure to his devotees. And we see from that appearance that before Krishna appeared in the womb of his mother Devaki, there were 6 children that preceded him. And those 6 children were ultimately killed by Kamsa. You know the story how the 8th child of Devaki, as the prophecy came from the sky heard by Kamsa, that this child would be the cause of your death. Kamsa, under the guise of, you know, a protector, turned into an enemy and then became a source of great misery for Devaki and Vasudev. And he killed 6 children born of Devaki. Of course, the story goes on from previous, how these 6 children were destined to be killed by Kamsa, because they were Kamsa's sons in his last life. But the point I'm trying to make is that each of these 6 children represented an anartha. I'm bringing to the historical point, to the allegorical point. Krishna's pastimes are both historical and allegorical. They're true, factual activities that have happened, but they also have great meaning. Each of these six sons that were killed by Kamsa before the appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead represented one anartha. And it's explained that there are six major anarthas. What are they? Lust, anger, greed, illusion, pride, and envy. These six things are like, they're like demons. So Krishna comes to kill the demons physically, but he also comes to kill the demons within our own heart, which are manifested by these six, what we say, anarthas. Before the Supreme Personality of Godhead can appear in the heart of his devotee, the devotee has to cleanse the heart by removing the effects of these six bad qualities: lust, anger, greed, kama, krodha, loba, mada, mohan, and matsarya. These are the six. Now we have the wonderful pastime, how when the two gatekeepers, Jai and Vijay, fell to the material world because of their offense against the four Kumaras, they were forced to take birth as demons. And the curse was that they would have to stay in the material world for three births as demons. So two demons, three births. And then that's in the understanding is that each of one of these demons represented one of the six anarthas. And Krishna killed every one of them. The first demon, who was the first demon? Saranyaksha. What was his quality or disquality? Who knows? He represents one of those six anarthas. Which one was it? Huh? Somebody said it. Greed. He was so greedy. He didn't consider the welfare of the inhabitants on the earth. He simply exploited the entire earth for as much gold as he could. So much so that the earth fell from its orbit within the cosmic creation, and fell out of its orbit down into the Garbhodaksai ocean. The demigods, headed by Lord Brahma, came to the ocean of milk, petitioned the Lord to please come and take care of this. This demon is too powerful. We can't do anything about him. So the Lord actually came as Varahadev. And then we know the story. He killed the demon of greed. So here we see how greed, what does it do? It pollutes the mind of the individual. They have no regard for anyone else. To satisfy one's own greed, even at the expense of the suffering of others. Just like we have today in today's world. You see that there are so many people who are starving. There are so many people who are suffering. There are people who can't even get food from day to day. They have no food to eat. We don't know this as devotees. We hear about it, but we don't experience it. But practically in every country of the world, there are people who are that don't have any food, they don't have any medical care, they don't have any homes or shelters. Why? Because of the greed of the governments of today's world. They're so greedy for economic resources that they're willing to go into areas and exploit countries simply to foster the wealth of the, what we say, the affluent population. You see, there's people who have so much wealth, they don't know what to do with it. And there's people who can't even eat from day to day. Because of the greed, Prabhupada said, because of the greed of today's politicians, the entire world is suffering. Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, in the 16th chapter, he explains that quality of greed. It's a very powerful verse. He's so much wealth do I have today, and I will gain more according to my schemes. So much is mine now, and I will increase in the future more and more. He is my enemy, and I have killed him, and my other enemy will also be killed. I am the Lord of everything. I am the enjoyer. I am perfect, powerful, happy. I am the richest man. Surrounded by aristocratic relatives, there is none so powerful and happy as I am. I shall perform sacrifice. I shall give some charity, and thus I shall rejoice. In this way, such persons are deluded by ignorance. So this greed, there's enough resources in the world to feed, Prabhupada said, there's enough resources in the world to feed the population 10 times over. But because of the misleaders of today's rulers, people are suffering. So Krishna came, and he killed the demon of greed. So who was the second demon? Hiranyakashipu. And what was his, we can't use the word quality. It's not a quality, but it's, what was his anartha? What was Hiranyakashipu thinking? What was his, yeah, you got it, pride. He was so proud. He thought there was nobody more powerful than me. He had captured the entire universe. In fact, all the demigods except Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Narada Muni were afraid of Hiranyakashipu. He was so powerful. He was sitting on the throne of Indra. In fact, when he raised his eyebrows, the demigods would flee in fear. He was so powerful. He had received a benediction from Lord Brahma that he would not die in so many different ways. In fact, he was thinking he was immortal. He tried to somehow become immortal. Brahma told him, you can't, because I can't give you immortality because I'm not immortal. Even Lord Brahma dies after 311,440,000,000,000 years. Of course, Brahma occurred to our lifetime. That's a long time. But Brahma still has to die. And so he tried to become immortal in an indirect way, trying to figure out so many ways that the living entity can be killed, and receiving a benediction to not be killed in that way. He was so proud. But the thing is, Krishna sent him a child that he couldn't control, his own little son, Prahlad Maharaj, 5-year-old boy. He was fearless. He preached to his father. He said to him, he pretty much said to him, you're in Maya. You're just, you know, you got so much, but you're not happy. What's the use of everything you had? Better give it all up, go to the forest. When he said forest, he meant Vrindavan Dham. Go to Vrindavan Dham and worship the Lord. And then you can be happy. And Hiranyakashipu tried to kill his son in so many ways because he couldn't control him. He could control everybody but his 5-year-old son. He was frustrated. A little 5-year-old boy was preaching. And then he tried to kill him in so many ways, but Krishna protected him. And then Hiranyakashipu, at one point, he said to his son, where do you get your power from? Prahlad said, I get my power from the same place you do. From the same place everybody gets their power from God. He's the source of all power. Whatever we have is simply a fraction of his power. It's coming from him. And that was the worst thing he could have said to his father. Anyway, tried him out. He said, my power is my power. And then he was about to kill Prahlad, and then Narada Sringadev appeared, finished him off, gave him the first successful heart operation, right? Removed his heart, purified him, actually. And Prahlad, after a while, Prahlad when the Lord Nrisimhadev was there, he said to Prahlad, "Prahlad, take a benediction from me. I want to give you something because I love you so much. You're my pure devotee." Prahlad said, "I don't worship you for anything material. I'm not asking for anything when I worship you. I'm worshiping because I love you." And the Lord said, "Anyway, take something anyway, because I want to give you something." And Prahlad said, "Well, if you want to give me something, free my father from Maya." In other words, give my father liberation. And the Lord said, "He's already liberated. As soon as he was killed by me, immediately he attained liberation." The Lord purified him simply by killing him. So that is the demon of pride. He was so proud, but Krishna crushed his pride in the form of his own pure devotee. People have so pride is the greatest form of illusion. Pride in good birth, pride in wealth, pride in position, pride in, but where all of these things come from? They come from Krishna. And by the mercy of the Lord, the living entity achieves a certain situation. And by the mercy of the Lord, the Lord also removes that situation. It said, "The Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away. Blessed be the Lord," right? They say that in the Christian tradition, right? Everything is the mercy of the Lord. So what can one be proud of? Actually, to be proud of anything in this world means to be proud of something that will actually be taken away in due course of time. So pride is a form of illusion. And it's very, they say, when one is proud, it's very hard for them to be humble. Or it's very hard to them to worship the Lord with great feeling. Because they think that I have so much, therefore, by that, I have achieved success. But then again, time comes along and takes everything away. So this idea of pride is just an illusion. Real pride is pride in being a devotee of the Lord. Because the Lord is the source of everything. And one who becomes a devotee of the Lord, they can feel the proud that they have received the mercy of the Lord. That is real pride. To be happy and to be feel themselves fortunate. I have received the mercy of the Lord. This is Vaishnava pride. Not the pride in something that is here today and gone tomorrow. Okay, so that was the demon of pride. What was the next demon? Huh? Ravana. What was his disqualification? Lust. He was so lusty. He had... Ravana was a scholar of the Vedas. He knew the Vedas. He was an intelligent man. But he was attracted by having things and having women. He had so many wives, and he had one very qualified wife, Mandodari. She was the most chaste and faithful wife. She served him 100% when in her life with everything. But he was never satisfied. Lust is compared to a fire. And if you want to put a fire out, you put fuel on the fire. When you put fuel on the fire, what happens? It gets bigger. Sometimes, if you use the example of a log, if you're building a fire with wood, and if you take a piece of wood and you throw it on the fire, what happens to the fire? It goes down for a little while, right? And then give it time, right? And then it blazes fire. So when you satisfy lust, it goes down for a little while. But then it just blazes up again. It burns really even more stronger. So lust is compared to a blazing fire. It's never satisfied. So Ravana, He had everything. But he wanted another man's wife. He wanted the wife of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was attracted by Sita. And because of that, he lost everything, including his life. And his friends, his brother, his followers were saying, his wife was saying, "You got everything. You know, give Sita back to Ram. He couldn't do it. He was so attached. This is lust. Lust destroys one's intelligence. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, "Dayatai vishayam pumsam teshu tang sangat sanjayate, sangat sanjayate kama, kama krodha vijayate, krodha bhavati sammoham, sammoham shriti ribrahma, shriti brahmsa buddhina sa buddhina sa pranashati." Krishna says, by contemplating the objects of the senses, one develops lust. From lust comes anger. From anger, bewilderment or delusion. One becomes deluded. By delusion, bewilderment of memory. When memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost. When intelligence is lost, one falls down again into the material pool. Simply by contemplating lusty desires. So Krishna says, you know, this lust is the destroyer of knowledge. It's the destroyer of self-realization. So Krishna came as Ram, and he killed the demon of lust. He shot the arrow into the heart, which is the seat of lust, right? He was cutting off Ravana's heads one after another, but his heads were growing back. And then the word came, hit him in the heart, which is the seat of lust. Heart is the seat of love also, but when that love is directed towards material energy, it becomes lust. Same thing. Love and lust are the same thing. It's the same energy. The pure love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, when it's diverted to objects in this world, it transforms itself into selfishness. And that becomes lust, because love is without selfishness. Love is for Supreme Personality of Godhead. And when you love Krishna, you love everything, including everybody. That is love. But when you try to possess something for your own selfish satisfaction, that is called lust. And Ravana, he couldn't hear anybody. He was losing his armies, he was losing his brothers, he was losing everything. And they were telling him, "Give Sita back." Wouldn't do it. He wouldn't do it. This example is that lust destroys intelligence. Couldn't hear anything, right? Sometimes even devotees, they know, "I know it's wrong, but I can't help it." Right? I know I shouldn't do it, but still I do it, right? Power of lust overshadows one's intelligence sometimes. So Ram came. And who was the next demon? Kumbhakarna. Everyone is fascinated by Kumbhakarna, right? What was his quality or disquality? Who knows? There's three left. We did three. There's three more. Illusion. He was so much in illusion. Right? What was Kumbhakarna's? Ravana performed so many austerities, and Kumbhakarna did too. Kumbhakarna was this powerful demon. He would consume anything and everything in existence. So what happened? The demigods ran to Lord Brahma and said to Brahma, "You know, you can't give this guy a benediction. He's already destroying everything. If you give him a benediction, there's nothing left. He's eating the whole world." So Brahma became really thoughtful. "What am I going to do? He's coming for me for a benediction." So he called Saraswati, his wife. Sometimes when you can't figure out something, you call your wife for help, you know, because a wife is the better side of the husband. So she said, you know, when he speaks the benediction that he wants, I'll appear on his tongue and say something different. So he came before Brahma. Brahma said, what do you want? I want to sleep. What? Granted. Brahma said, so be it, you can sleep. And Ravana was there. I said, you can't give him that benediction. It's not a benediction. He asked for it. Kumbhakarna didn't even know what he said, you know. Saraswati just bewildered his mind. So Ravana started pleading on behalf of his brother. You can't do that. But Brahma said, all right, he can wake up one day a year. And he has to sleep for 364 days. And for one day he can get, and then he can eat as much as he wants on that one day. Right? So when it was the big battle between Ram and Ravana, you know, at one point Ravana decided to call Kumbhakarna, and he was sleeping. And he was fast asleep. So they wanted to wake him up, but it wasn't the time for him to get up. So they brought all these soldiers to wake him up. And they were blowing bugles and trumpets and beating on drums, but he wouldn't wake up. Sometimes, you know, in the morning when it's time for Mangal Arati, just hit the clock, the snooze button, push it back down again. Don't want to get up. Kumbhakarna. So that didn't work. So they started to beat him with clubs. And all the soldiers were beating him with, and that didn't do anything. So then they decided to ride chariots over his body. So they were, and then he moved a little bit. So sleep is compared to ignorance. To some people in the material world, they like to sleep so much, right? Devotees don't like to sleep, right? Because there's so many hours in the day and you want to serve Krishna. So we always want to use as much time as we can for serving Krishna. So sleep is like ignorance. But sometimes when the clock rings in the morning, it's time to get up for Mangal Arati to do the puja, and we just, not today. Push the clock down. I'd rather take darshan of the inside of my eyelids. It's even much nicer. Instead of the darshan of Krishna. Yeah, sleep. You know, I read a statistic just recently. This is an amazing statistic. It was a survey done by the University of California in San Diego that they studied the effects of sleep. And the conclusion was that those who sleep 6 hours are generally better in better health than those who sleep 8 hours. Because in the material world, the thing is you have to have 8 hours sleep, right? That's what I grew up. 8 hours is your... Of course, Prabhupada told us 6 hours. So people generally in the material world sleep out 8 hours. But this survey done by the University of California showed that people who sleep 6 hours generally have better health than people who sleep 8 hours. Even people who sleep 5 hours are in better health. And people who sleep 10 hours have a mortality rate of people who are generally overweight. So too much sleep is bad for your health. That was the conclusion. Just so you think, sometimes we think, you know, get as much sleep as I can. I remember, you know, sometimes before you became a devotee, you go to, you know, you're out all night to about 2 or 3 in the morning, and then you sleep to about 3 in the afternoon, right? Like the clock is reversed, you know. People just, you know, they take shelter of sleep. Sleep is too much sleep is another form of frustration. When you're happy, you want to do things, right? And when you're not happy, you just want to not do things, right? So many times people take shelter of sleep just because they're not happy. So Kumbhakarna, he was sleeping for the whole year except for one day. And when he woke up, what did he do? Finally, they woke him up. The soldiers woke him up. And what did he do? He just ate. They had all these big buckets of blood and fat, because rakshasas, they eat human flesh. And he was like eating, just eating, and they were just feeding him and consuming so many things. So this is the demon of illusion, that simply by eating and sleeping, maintaining the body through these things, one is actually thinks that they're happy. So this is the world of illusion, that satisfying the demands of the body is the mode of happiness. That was the demon of illusion, killed by who killed Kumbhakarna? Huh? Hanuman? Well, no, it wasn't Hanuman. Ram killed him, right? Yeah, he's right. Ram killed him. I wasn't sure whether it was Lakshman or Ram. It was Ram who killed him. Yeah, when he came out of the city, he was towering above the whole city. When all the monkey soldiers saw that, they said, "Wow, what is that?" They ran. Some of them, not all of them. Hanuman and Sugriva said, "Come back, come back." He was just grabbing monkeys like 100 at a time. It's like a mad brahmachari at a feast, you know. Stuffing all kinds. Something like that, anyway. Maybe a little bit worse, but... Anyway, eating and sleeping. The demon of illusion. So there was two left. So Krishna came again. This time he came as Krishna, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he killed the last two demons. And who was the next one? Shishupal. What was his quality? Or disquality? Huh? Envious. He was so envious. Shishupal was actually had a good birth. He was born with four arms. Shishupal's mother was the cousin. Shishupal was the cousin of Krishna. And he was born with four arms. His mother took him to an astrologer, and the astrologer said, "You know, when he sees the person who will kill him, two of his arms will fall off." That was part of the astrological reading. Now, when Shishupal was born, the first thing he said out of his mouth, because when babies, you know, like the mother says, oh, waiting for the first words of the baby, right? What is he going to say? Mama, or Dada, Kaka, you know, Hindu. And what did Shishupal say? The first thing he said was, "You rascal Krishna." First words of the baby. That's what he said. When he... He came out and he was braying like an ass, you know. "You rascal Krishna." And he just had this thing for Krishna. And he was just blaspheming Krishna. So Shishupal's mother decided to have the first birthday ceremony. He was 1 year old. And she called all the relatives, and she invited Krishna to come. Krishna says, "You don't want me to come." She said, no, come see my baby. He's your cousin. Krishna said, you don't really want me to come. She said, no, Krishna, you must come, you must come. Krishna said, all right. And Krishna came, and then Krishna came, and when Shishupal, the little baby, looked at Krishna, two of his arms fell off. And his mother was shocked. She said, "Krishna, you're going to be the cause of the kill of my baby?" He said, "I don't want to kill him, but he hates me. He's so envious of me. But I'll give him a benediction. He can blaspheme me 100 times, but he must stop and take a breath before he goes on to 101. Jai Shri Gaur Nitai Ki Jai. And therefore he can blaspheme, but he has to take a breath after 100, and then he can start again. So during the Rajasuya sacrifice, they were electing the most important personality to be the head of the ceremony. So unanimously, all the sages and the Yudhisthira's Maharaj and everyone, they elected Krishna as the most worshipful and honorable person to preside over the ceremony of the Rajasuya sacrifice. When Shishupal heard that, he got up and became angry. He started criticizing Krishna. He started blaspheming Krishna. And he just kept going and going. And Krishna was just listening. And then some of the soldiers were becoming angry at Shishupal. And Krishna was counting 95, 96, 97, 98, 99, 100, 101. Krishna took out his chakra and cut off his head right in the middle of the ceremony. Jai Shri Krishna. Killed Shishupal. Of course, everyone was shocked. And in order not to contaminate the whole sacrifice, none of the blood from Shishupal's body hit the ground. Because if the blood hit the ground, that would contaminate the whole sacrifice. So Krishna, the Sudarshan chakra caught all the blood before it hit the ground. Krishna can do anything. So he killed Shishupal, demon of envy. And then Krishna left, and he was on his way to Vrindavan to see the residents. And guess who he met on the way? The last demon, Dantravarka. He was the king of Kalinga, Dantravarka. You know, Balaram smashed his teeth and knocked them all out one time because he was harassing Balaram. When he saw Krishna, he became so angry. It said that his anger was like so, was red hot anger, that he charged at Krishna with his club and he smashed Krishna. Krishna knocked his club out of his hand. Then he came at Krishna again with his fist. He just tried to punch Krishna. Just Krishna. Krishna didn't waste time with Dantravarka because he wanted to get to Vrindavan to see the residents, because the gopis were waiting for Krishna to return. So he just finished him off, just punched him. Things finished. So Krishna killed the demon of anger. So this thing is very significant for devotees to understand. These six things, lust, anger, greed, illusion, pride, and envy, these are the six, what we say, anarthas. And before Krishna can appear within the heart of the devotee has to free themselves from these things. So the demons exist outside, but they also exist within our own hearts and minds. So Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda have come to destroy these demons. But not the demons like Krishna killed, but the demons within our own heart. These demons are the same thing. Lust, anger, greed, illusion, pride, envy, and what's the other one? That's the six. And until we can free ourselves from these things, we cannot actually taste the happiness of our relationship with Krishna. So gradually, so we chant the Hare Krishna mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. Chaito, Darpanam, Marjanam. By chanting the holy names of the Lord, the mind becomes pure, the free, and the heart becomes pure. Mind becomes free from illusion, the heart becomes pure, free from all unauthorized, or what we say, unarthas. Those things that are blocking our relationship with Krishna. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Saru Kabunai Shravanadi Siddhi Chitti Kariya Udoy. In the heart of all living beings, pure love for God exists. That love is like a raging river. It is just, it cannot be, you know, it cannot be stopped by anything, but it's blocked by the dams of our illusion. That is lust, anger, greed, pride, all these bad qualities. The sun is in the sky, just like today. The sun is there, but you can't see it. Why? Because of the clouds. The clouds are blocking the sun. But if you fly your plane above the clouds, you can see the sun. It's there, brightly shining. So these things, these anarthas are like clouds that cover over the pure love of the soul. And as we chant the holy names of the Lord, we remove these clouds of illusion and envy, pride, and lust, and then we awaken our natural attraction for Krishna. And that is the goal of life. And whatever it takes to get the clouds removed. And of course, the most powerful thing is to chant the holy names, to associate with spiritually minded people, and to practice the principles of devotional service. As we do this, we gradually purify our hearts and ultimately awaken our natural attraction for Krishna. So, in order to do that, we need the mercy of the Lord in the form of His holy name. So we chant the holy names of the Lord, pray for the Lord's mercy. Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda are so merciful. They are so kind. Their kindness, and Prabhupada came to Atlanta, Georgia, and this is in America, 1975. He came for a three-day lecture at the temple. And on that temple, in that temple, they have three altars. And in the middle altar is Gornitai. Radha and Krishna are on that side, and Jagannath is on this side. Gornitai is in the middle. Beautiful, big brass deities of Gornitai, big. Prabhupada sat down, and he was about to give a lecture. And he started to sing Padma Karuna, Bahudui Jani, Nitai Goda Chandra, Sabayavatar Kaval, Sarosidomani, Kevala Nandakanda, which glorifies the mercy of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. Prabhupada got through about two or three words. He stopped. He fell silent. He couldn't speak. He couldn't chant. The whole temple was silent. Prabhupada said, and after a few minutes he said, "These two lords, they are so kind. They are so merciful. Please take advantage of their mercy." And then he stopped the lecture. He just had kirtan. He couldn't speak. Prabhupada was feeling the love that Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda is giving to the world. How compassionate, how kind they are. What is our qualification to perform devotional service? Prabhupada says, "You have no qualification. Qualification is the mercy of the Lord." And that mercy is readily available through the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Nityananda. So if we follow the process given by them, chant the holy names of the Lord, associate with devotees, take nice Krishna prasadam, try to understand our relationship by reading books like Bhagavatam and Srimad Bhagavad Gita, gradually we can experience the happiness that is natural to the living being. Not mundane happiness, but real happiness. That happiness that never ends. What is that? Brahma Sokyam, the happiness that is experienced in relationship to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is eternal. It's unlimited and it's eternal. It never stops and it's always increasing. Material happiness is a whole other thing. Material happiness is like this. It goes. Right? You get something new. Oh, so nice. A new car. And after a few years, got to get another one. Right? Material life means change, 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 change. People are always changing because they can never be satisfied. But spiritual life means you can chant a holy name. And what do? Prabhupada said, someone asked Prabhupada, "What do you get from chanting?" One reporter, Prabhupada said, "We get chanting from chanting." Right? Yeah, in New York City, some reporter asked, Swamiji, you're chanting. Well, what do you get from chanting? He was thinking, you know, maybe you get some power or some problem. So we get chanting from chanting. The more we chant, the more we chant. Because chanting is nice. And then the more it works, it's like it's purifying the heart. And as the heart becomes purified, one becomes happy. And then one experiences the happiness of chanting, and one continues to chant. This is Krishna consciousness. Oh, okay, I'll stop here. Any questions? Comments? No, question. No? Is that a question? No. Any questions? Yes, Prabhu. The question is there an antidote or something you can counteract these things? Yeah. But it's only temporary. Just for this, like, of course, Prabhupada thinks there is material antidotes, but there's also a spiritual antidote. A spiritual antidote for lust is to use that energy to serve the Lord. To dovetail that lusty desire by engaging all of your senses, all of your energy in the service of the Lord. That purifies lust. Lust, you know, it's just the natural tendency of the living entity to love Krishna. And when that energy is diverted to something in this material world, it takes the form of lust. So by engaging in devotional service, one counteracts that. Now for greed, there's an antidote for greed, is that you can be greedy for Krishna, be greedy for devotional service. Or you can give in charity. That helps to diminish the element of greed. For anger, anger can be an antidote by forgiveness. If something makes you angry, then, or some person makes you angry, you can cultivate the mood of forgiveness. But Prabhupada says all these things can be dovetailed except one, matsarya, envy. Envy cannot be dovetailed. Envy has to be given up. Envy is the root cause of all anarthas.